Well, welcome. Thanks for braving the cold. It sure is like a wind tunnel around parts of our building. First of all, let me kind of just get a feel for our ages. Anyone with under 2 years old? Under 2 years old. Okay. Couple 2 year olds. How many 2 year olds do I have here? Oh, you got two. For a couple days, your older twos. Okay, you guys have twos. Good. 3 year olds. How many do I have? All right, couple threes and then fours into fives. Okay, there we go. All right. So we kind of want, we'll go highlight just some of the smaller stuff. It looks like the bulk of our ages are going to be our fours getting ready for kindergarten. So we will kind of focus more on that. If you have questions about younger ages, I don't mind you to jump in and ask a question because I'm happy to answer if something pops into your head. But we'll kind of focus more on our older threes and fours. That seems to be kind of where we are tonight. Okay. The outline that we're handing out tonight, tell me, first of all, give me some ideas of what you guys think getting ready for kindergarten means. What does that mean to you as a parent? There's no wrong answer. Don't be afraid. See, you've got to be like the kids. Got to be willing to try. Anything that you think, what does it mean to get ready for kindergarten?
All interactions.
Yes. Yes.
Alphabet, numbers, letters, colors.
Okay. Academic part. Anything else?
Getting along with other children.
Yes. Very good. So we have the social emotional foundation that needs to be laid. And frankly, when that part is laid well, the academic part comes way easier. Okay? The academics is actually the easy part of school. But when someone is deciding on whether holding their child for a gift of another year, maybe we have that late spring, summer birth date, it is normally for social emotional reasons. It's not normally because they can't do their letters and they can't spell their name and it's not the academic part. It is normally the social emotional part. And again, when you're making that choice, you're really not looking, can my child pass kindergarten in 6 or 8 months? You are really looking ahead. I'm going to have the tax test, star test in third grade. Can they handle that at that point? Can they say no to the things they need to say no to in middle school and high school? Are they socially and emotionally ready now to start that? Or would 12 more months help them to make those decisions easier and better for them when they're older? Everyone can pass through kindergarten. That's really not what we're looking at when we're looking at a gift of another year. We're looking ahead. We're looking down the road, and you're making those decisions now at four and early five for something in the future, okay? But getting ready for kindergarten has a multi-components when you're doing that. A couple of the areas that I want you guys to look at, you can go to the web. You can go to WebMD and a lot of different things. Please don't. They will drive you crazy. They will tell you all different stuff. If you want to find out what really needs to happen, American Academy of Pediatrics, the Texas Early Learning Council, TEA is a Texas education agency. That is the agency that is set up by the state of Texas to determine everything your child will learn from pre-K through their senior year in high school. They determine every textbook. They determine what they call TEKS, which is the Texas Assessment of Essential Skills, Knowledge and Skills. So everything that a child needs to learn in the first 6 weeks of first grade, TEA decides that. So this is a very good agency for you guys. Can go on their website, check out information. They have the requirements. They determine your textbooks that you're going to use in most of your, they give you suggestions, and then your district picks the textbook that they want to use on most of the things. There are a few that are given by TEA. And then you can go to your school website. If you're in Frisco, it's friscoisd.org, mckinneyisd.org, louisville.isd.org. Get very, very familiar with your website for your school district. The days of bringing home papers like we used to our parents, it's all online now. So if you're not familiar with it, you don't have to have a student ID or any special information to log on and just start going through. Where do I find the calendar on my school website? Where do I find out information about the school I'm going to go to? Start reading the stuff that's happening. So you can get on all of that now and start looking. It's very, very good information. Frisco as a district has what they call Thursday folders. And it used to be that hundreds of sheets of paper would come home in these Thursday folders, and parents had to go through all of it, sign what they needed to sign to send back, and then all the rest of it was information. All of that is now online at your home campus, so you can see stuff that's coming up, or certain things will come home if that needs your signature, but it has really dwindled down very, very much. So get online and start looking at the Frisco ISD or McKinney or wherever you're going to go to school. Also, TEA has, when you're in pre-K, they have a set of guidelines that they have on their website, and I've given you that there to go look through and get an idea of what pre-K would look like if pre-K existed in your district. What they would be learning if you're in a Head Start program or if you're in a state-sponsored pre-K, the things that they would be doing that way. Okay, so all of that is listed on these things. These are notable websites. These are reputable websites. This is accurate information. You can find anything to support anything on the web, but these are going to help you the most in finding out what is truthful about what my child needs to know and what my child needs to get to when we go to school in August, okay? Now, there's some different areas that we work on in preschool that are kind of learning objectives is what we call them. If you don't mind, I'll have you pass a couple of these out. We'll just start passing these back. These are learning objectives that we put together that are in different areas of a child's life. These are the things that we work on, and I've got about 45 minutes or an hour because I want to give you guys questions. I'm highlighting this. We spend 4 years working on this with our kids, and then kindergarten teachers and elementary teachers continue to work on these, except the spiritual part, but they continue working on these. So we are going to highlight some things as we go through here. There's a lot of information, but please don't think everything I'm giving you is all that needs to be done. There's hundreds of ways to do this. There's lots of opportunity for you to work with your children if you see an area of growth that is needed in your child. I just gave you all mine. Okay, the first one, spiritual areas that we have, and it's broken down there on your charts in the different ages. Now, that does not mean that your child must meet every single thing the day they turn 2 or the day they turn 3. This is a whole year of development in this. There is many things that play into it. Birth order makes a big difference in a child's development. Gender makes a huge difference in a child's development. If English is your first or second language, usually if it's a second language, you are beginning to speak a little bit later. Does that mean that there's a problem? No. They're compartmentalizing 2 different languages and learning them simultaneously. It just means it's going to take them a little longer to get all that together. So there are many factors that play into your child having 500 words at 18 months old. There's a lot of different things that will do that. Please don't think I need to go to the doctor because my child only says 475. I mean, you don't need to do that. These are guidelines that will help you to know if your child is kind of where they should be. These were put together through what we teach and through the agencies and the websites that we just talked about. Okay, that's how we came up with our guidelines and our learning objectives that we use for our school. Through spiritual using the Bible is an amazing way to help them teach respect of books. First of all, books need to be taught to be respectful. I know that might sound very silly, that might sound very basic, but you have to understand a child doesn't know, and a little toddler's first thing to do is to take and tear. They want to feel it. They got to touch it. They got to have hands on. They're going to eat it or they're going to tear it. So we're teaching respect of books. This is a great way to use the Bible to teach how respectful we need to be of books, because this is God's special book that He gave. This is a book we can use all the way from when you're little. Even mommy and daddy read the book. Using this in your home is going to, how you use this in your home is going to determine the importance of the Bible and Jesus. Because if this is taught to be respectful, if this is used regularly, if we read from this often, if we refer back to it, how it's used in your home is going to give that child the importance that your family places on the spiritual values. Okay, they need to know that this is God's book, that everything in it is true. It really, really happened. Say those things over and over and over until you are blue in the face. You have to realize you guys as adults get sick of saying something over and over. But children feel comfort in hearing the same thing. That becomes security to them. That becomes a comfort because they know it's going to be the same. They get to predict what's going to be said. They get to predict what's going to happen. And they get a true comfort from hearing the same thing over and over. Adults are like, if I hear or say that one more time. But children feel great about knowing that mama's going to say, it really, really happened. The Bible's a special book. Or daddy coming home to read my Bible story before I go to bed. Those are special things that children need to hear. You can also, in working with, in developing the spiritual part of it, again, this might, and please, I'm not insulting. I'm just going through. I'm just not knowing how much you guys know about this. But, complimenting a child on the gifts that God gave them. You have beautiful curly hair. You can always compliment a child on their clothing. They usually have no choice on what they put on their body to wear, and they had no opinion really on buying that. And so what you're going to compliment a child on are the things that God gave them. He gave you beautiful, sparkly eyes. I love it when you smile. It lights up your whole face. Those are the things that we try to compliment the kids on. Or you are such a helper. Thank you for being. I see that you have a spirit of helping and willingness to help others. Those are the things that you're going to compliment and develop the spiritual part, the self-worth on a child, because those are the things that are innate in them. Those are the unchangeable things. So you're going to compliment and grow that as an important part of them. Okay? Usually people say, oh, your little dress is so cute, or your boots are fantastic, or buddy, I love your shirt. Again, they had no, they might have picked the blue shirt over the red shirt that day, but really they didn't have a whole lot of say in what their choices were. So using the things that God gave them and developing those spiritual gifts or seeing characteristics that they have, those are great ways for them to learn about the importance, the spiritual importance, because you're complimenting them on things that God gave them. And as they get older, they're going to realize that. Also, beginning to trust adults in their life is a huge way to develop their spiritual part. Mom and dad are always going to come back when they say, please, when you leave, if you have any of the little ones here, please don't sneak out on children. They're thinking, oh, they're playing, I'm going to sneak out. Let them know you're leaving every time. Even 3 and 4 year olds, they need to know, okay, mommy's leaving, I'll be back in just a little bit. They need to know you left, so they're going to know that you're coming back. If you sneak out, they're going to be in fear every time. If I don't keep my eye on her, she's going to leave. And so that, you know, always make sure that you're telling your child goodbye before they leave, before you leave, and that you will be back. And that is part of a social emotional development, is realizing that those trusted adults in my life, moms, dads, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whoever it is that is in their family, is leaving but will come back. That separation anxiety that happens at specific ages, starting at about 3 and 6 months old, all the way up, most people don't realize it, but the last separation anxiety is usually about to happen in your little 4 and a half year old life. That's about the last separation anxiety time. You'll see silly things going on and you'll think, you must be tired. What are you doing? You haven't cried like this, or you haven't been in fear to leave me. But the last separation anxiety phase really happens about 4 and a half. They're hearing this looming kindergarten word and they don't really know what it means. And everybody else seems to be excited, but they don't have knowledge of really what that is, especially if they're a first or only child. So they're trying to say, oh, yay, I'm excited about kindergarten because mommy and daddy are smiling when they say kindergarten. But yet they don't know, what does that mean? How is that different to what I'm doing now? What does big school mean? Unless they have a brother or sister that they've walked into the school before and they've met some teachers and done some things, they really don't know what kindergarten means. But they're trying to be happy because they see everybody else that they trust in their world being happy about kindergarten. So usually about a little over 4 to 4 and a half, we usually have, like right now coming back in the next month or two, it's our last separation anxiety phase, where 4 year olds are hanging on to their parents, don't want them to leave, feeling stressed out about things, and it's just that last phase. It's a short time, fortunately. That two year old phase seems to last longer, but the 4 and a half year old phase is relatively short, so that's good news. But it does happen, and it's very surprising to a lot of parents. They think, I've already outgrown this, when really you're just entering your final phase. Okay? Motor skills that kids have, there's two different types of motor skills that they will begin to develop. There's gross motor, your large muscle, and fine motor are your small muscles. And kids start from the inside out. Little babies start just moving their arms and moving their legs, and then they begin to move their hands and stretch their arms and stretch their legs out from the fetal position, and they start being able to reach out a little bit. So they're developing from the inside out. So a four-year-old is far more coordinated than a two-year-old because they've practiced more. They've had more opportunity. You need to provide practices for both fine motor and gross motor skills in developing these things. Now, will everyone develop at the same rate? No. Some kids are very athletically gifted and they will get things quick. God gave some of them the gift of climbing and they've got it down at a very early age. Some kids, I have some sweet little girls that trip over their feet every day. And, you know, they're 3 and 4 years old. But that's just how they are. They're working on things. So everyone develops at a different rate, but you need to provide in your child's day opportunity for gross and fine motor skills. Anyone really know the reason school starts at 5? Because these muscles right here to hold that pencil, to do your tripod hold, don't develop until age 5. So they can't really start writing the way that a kindergarten teacher needs them to until these muscles are fully developed. And that's really not until 5. You can begin to write, obviously, much earlier. And you'll see some of, you know, a lot of children writing, but you're not going to see it in that controlled form, in those lines with that dotted line, like a teacher wants it to be normally until around age 5. Okay? We start working on it at 3.5 to really start encouraging it, where we're getting the capital letter as the first of their name, you know, the first letter, and all the other letters are the lowercase. That's what the districts want you to see. The first letter of a sentence, some of our kiddos who have early or older siblings are very, very interested in writing much earlier because they want to do homework with the older siblings. And so some of our second or third children want to sit down and write with them. And so they'll practice and they'll do it a little bit earlier. That's just part of birth order differences because second and third children tend to do things at an earlier age because they want to be like big brother, big sister. Okay? But gross motor skills, you need them jumping. You need them being able to walk, being able to jump up, jump down. Those are things that they need to be able to do. And not so much to pass kindergarten, but these are things that they're going to do. It all develops the brain. And each level of things that are on your list is a layer of the brain that develops in a certain order. So they need to, not to pass or to read, you know, to do your academic part of kindergarten, but the jumping up on something, jumping down and not falling, having that coordination, having a line. You'll see in PE, that's why a lot of the PE things are like having a line and the kids are jumping over the line. That is a part of brain development. And so that's why PE teachers are getting your kiddos to do that. Fine motor skills, reaching for things as little kids, grabbing things as toddlers, being able to get that to the right place, whether it's food or drink and getting it to my mouth, or getting mommy and daddy's head to give a hug when we're very little. When we're older, we're getting the right crayon out of the box in order to color our picture when we're in our 3s and 4s. So a lot of those reaching, grabbing, that type of thing, you'll start with clapping and waving and picking up. And you know how a toddler picks up. It's full hand down and whatever they can get comes up. And we mature as we go, and then a four-year-old can go into using, you know, one or two fingers and picking up this way, the pincher grip. And that's what you want to work towards. There's lots of ways to encourage that. Boys especially tend to be a little bit slower in that. Doesn't mean they don't catch up. Doesn't mean they're not going to pass kinder. Simply means, gender-wise, they tend to be a little bit slower. But there are tons of ways to encourage your child to do that and develop those skills. Again, all the things that we do are to develop these muscles and strengthen these, because when they have to go start writing in their math center or doing everything they have to do in kindergarten in their literacy center, those muscles need to be there. Kids get very tired with their hands after, you know, writing. If you write for a long time, which most of us don't anymore, we end up typing. But when you sit and write for a while, your hand even gets tired. So just like you do, they have to develop those muscles this way. Some fantastic ways to do that at home. Anything upright this way. You know, you let them color on the floor, color on your table, give them an easel. Let them color and paint give them a bucket and a paintbrush and full of water, and they go outside and paint the fence. It's water. It's not going to hurt anything, but they're doing this up and down motion, you know, kind of like Karate Kid, you do this up and down motion. That is a great way for children to develop skills. If they're writing on a chalkboard, if they're painting at an easel, we paint at the easel every day for that sole purpose of developing muscles this way. Painting outside on your house, having letters, we use our air pencils and our air pens a lot because it doesn't make any messes, and we have our own erasers with our thumb. So you have your air pencil and they can write up here. There's nothing in their hand, just their air pencil. You can have them write letters on the wall, spell their name on the wall this way. That way your wall isn't getting dirty, and we talk about it's our air pencil only. When we make a mistake, we don't cry, we don't get sad, we don't do anything. We just use our air eraser and we fix it and we go back and do it the right way. Another way to do it so you can feel if they're doing it is let them draw, write their letters on your back. So they're using their air pencil again, and they're writing the letters, and you're feeling the proper or improper shape of the letters as they're practicing it, okay? So these are all fun ways to get your kiddos to develop muscles and skills that they just need to have. Some have it naturally. It's a gift that God gave them. Some need to just develop, okay? But fine motor and gross motor are some things that need to be really put into a day. If they're in a school already, they're out for recess and they're practicing those gross motor skills. Fine motor skills are going to be some of the things we're working on academically, or even in like puzzles and manipulative centers if they go to a school somewhere, because those are very important to learn to start moving things and putting them around. So at your house, some things that you can do, tweezers or tongs that you use for like spaghetti, smaller size, not the huge ones, but tweezers are fantastic helpers at home. You can lift cotton balls, pom-poms, Q-tips, beans, pasta. You can lift anything you want with those tweezers. And they have to so carefully go in, grab it, squeeze it to hold it in the tweezer, and move it from one muffin tin to another muffin tin. So you've got all the red pom-poms need to be over here in the left muffin tin, and all the blue pom-poms need to be over here in the right muffin tin. That's math. That's sorting. That's fine motor skills. That's sequencing. It's all kinds of stuff wrapped up in fun things. There's a ton of ideas. If you have questions about ideas to do, I'm happy to help you with that later. But there's a lot of things that you can do at your house, free of charge, no cost, don't have to buy supplies, and you probably you just don't look at it in that form of education. You look at it in the form of tweezers or tweezers and pasta, you know, tongs or pasta tongs. So you just have to get out of kind of that mindset of looking at it and think, how can I use this educationally? But muffin tins are absolutely fantastic tools to help your kids learn to sort and to sequence things and put things in order or in groups. We use those a lot. There is something that's very important. It's called the midline of your body. We have three midlines on our body. We have the left side. We have the right side. That's one midline. So you got it from left to right. You've got the other one that goes top half, bottom half. And then you've got front and back. So those are your three midlines. The purpose of knowing about midlines is because your brain has two halves. This side of your brain controls this side of your body. This side of your brain controls this side of your body. And until those two halves of your brain actually speak to each other, academics don't happen, because they're controlling them separately. So crossing the midline is a huge, huge thing that you need to get your child to do. Helps with coordination. It helps with sequencing. It's pre-emergent reading when you're getting them to do all of these things that will help them for kindergarten and learning on later. Excuse me, simple things that you can get them to do. When you ask them to take something, ask them to take it and cross it this way. Go ahead and take that. Okay, now I want you to switch hands, and I want you to hand it back to me. So all they've done is switched hands. What he had to do is get that half of his brain to talk to that half of his brain to switch hands. Something simple that you can do is play silly games with them when they're liking. You can get them to pretend to box or pretend to snap or whatever you want them to do. And if you cross this way and then this way, they can do that. You can get them to kick or try and touch here and here. All they're doing is crossing the midlines of your body. Head, shoulders, knees, and toes. That is a midline song. That is a fantastic mid. Because you're going up and down, and your brain is having to think, how do I get from the top part of my body to the bottom part of my body? That is gross motor, fine motor, and getting your brain halves to talk to each other to be one complete brain, okay? So it is very, very important to get those brains to talk to each other. If you guys, even as adults, find yourself a little bit frustrated and you just feel frazzled, you're like, I just don't have it together today. It's just not syncing. Seriously, take about 5 deep breaths and do something silly, like just stand there and cross your feet like this back and forth. Instead of usually we just sway back and forth, just try and move your feet. All you're doing is getting your brain to talk to each other, and it kind of just resets and resyncs your brain. That's all you really have to do. Or just start the Macarena. We do the Macarena to days of the week and months of the year song. It's fantastic. You're everywhere. You're going on all parts of your body. It is a great movement to the days of the week or the months of the year song. And they're just silly things like that that really help your brain get ready to handle incoming information. So if you feel yourself stressed out at work a little bit, just kind of cross the midline, take a little breath. People may think that you're silly, but just tell them I'm crossing the midline and I know I'm going to help my brain. They'll be fine. Cognitive skills, knowing and understanding languages. That is important. That develops early in most children. That helps us to understand. They understand language, understand the language, hear it and understand it far, far earlier than they can speak it. Again, these are fine motor skills. It's much harder to get your mouth in the shape and control your tongue and where it's supposed to go. That's why it's much harder for children to speak at an early age. But you can look at a child, usually well under one, say, do you want a drink? And they'll give you some sort of motion that will tell you, yes, I want my passy. I want a drink. I want my lovey. I need clean diapers. They'll give you that. They understand what you're saying far earlier than they can reply to you. That's why sign language is such a fantastic way to help your children learn and be able to communicate and removing that frustration of communication with them, because they're understanding. And just picture yourself, put yourself in maybe a language that you don't understand. You know what you want, but you can't tell anybody what you want. You don't have the words to tell anybody if you were in a different country and couldn't understand their language or know the words to tell them. So it's kind of the same thing if you think about it like that. Using sign language with children, usually 4 to 6 months old, they'll start picking that up and they'll use it very, very well. A lot of teachers will use that in their classroom, so you don't have, teacher, I gotta go potty. R for restroom. They raise their hand and they're doing sign language. Letter R means I need to go to the bathroom. And so a lot of the teachers will have signs that they use in classrooms, and that's just easiest to communicate, keeping the classroom a little bit quieter, because kindergarten, 24 to 26 of them, gets a little noisy. So anything that you can do to control some noise as a teacher is fantastic when you have that many of them. Problem-solving skills happen as the cognitive skills develop. When you have a toddler, they're going through that filling and dumping stage. You've cleaned those Lego bricks up about a million times, and you're about want to throw them through the wall, and that toddler smiles every time they dump them out. Because they're learning, and they never get tired of the repetition. Repetition is so very, very important for kiddos. And so they're going through that process of, if I lift this part of the truck, they all fall out every time. And then when they realize that, they're like, okay, now I have to put them back because they don't jump back in. Those are problem-solving skills. That's sequencing. Sequencing is so vital to learn as early as possible, because sequencing is math. Sequencing is reading. We have to know the letters in order to get the word chunks, in order to get the words, in order to get the sentences, in order to get the paragraphs. All of that is a sequencing event. So when they're doing filling and dumping, and you're like, okay, just stop, put it back, and you shove it back in the toy box, you're like, let's try something else, let them fill and dump. Because they're learning what they need to learn at that point. I know, again, it's frustrating as adults. Maybe it doesn't need to happen right by your feet in the kitchen next to the stove when you're cooking dinner. I get that part. There needs to be some boundaries on that. But, you know, they need to do those processes. When you've read a book, their favorite book, and you can read it with your eyes closed because you've memorized every word on every page, and really they have too, Ask them to read you the book. I want to hear you read the book. They've memorized it. They're not actually reading any word on the page, but they know which words belong to which page and pictures, and they will read you the book. Number one, you just taught them how to go left to right. You taught them how to go top to bottom on a book. You just sequence that for them as they're learning how to memorize and read that. You also just gave them confidence that they can do it, which half of academics is nothing more than the confidence to try something new and yet the willingness to have it be wrong and be willing to try again. Okay? You have to be willing to try something and get it wrong and try it again. That's practice. Okay? And so when you have them read the book, especially if it's one that they love and they've memorized, let them read it. Tease them. Turn the book upside down and start reading it. And watch what happens. They get so upset. No, no, Mama, that's not right. Turn the book. It goes this way. You know they're starting to get the left to right, top to bottom stuff. You want them to be able to do that for you. If it's a brand new book, talk about the book. Talk about what the title is. Even little toddlers and twos. The title of this book is the author. That means the person that wrote the book. The illustrator, that's the person who drew the pictures, and read their names. God gave these people gifts to write words, and God gave these people gifts to draw pictures, and they made this book for us to read. They need to know all of that. They're not fully going to understand it, but what you're doing is you're setting a precedence for when I get a new book in my hand, I read the title, I find the author, I find the illustrator. I've got it now in the right direction. We're going front to back. We're going top to bottom. We're going left to right. These are all things that they need to learn. When you have a brand new book, give your child the opportunity at 3 or 4 years old. What do you think is going to happen? Let's look at this picture. What do you think the words on this page will tell us about this picture? Let them predict. Let them get some ideas out. You're allowing them that time to formulate opinions, to come up with ideas and suggestions. Now, if you're in a hurry, please don't do this because you'll want to finish their sentences. You'll want to spit it out for them. So you need to have time to do this because it's going to take time when they're in the very beginning stages of learning these things to put their words together in the right way. They hear it. They know, again, what they want to say, but to get it out in the right way takes time. So please be patient and don't hurry them through their process. Give them a chance to talk about the different animals on that page and maybe, we've got a zebra and we have an elephant and we've got a bear and I see a word here that looks like a place I've been. Maybe we're at the zoo. What do you think the little boy is doing in here? I think he's watching the animals. I think so too. Do you think he's hearing what the animals say? Just engage conversation with them because a huge part of school is reading, understanding, and then being able to tell it back. That's going to be your kindergarten homework, is guided reading. What did I read? What were the main points of the story? I mean, they're writing 2-3 word sentences, you know, not long, but they're trying, the kindergarten teachers, are trying to get them to understand that reading comprehension. That is your third grade star test, reading comprehension, basically. I'm going to take a paragraph. It's going to have 5 or 6 paragraphs in this little reading excerpt that they're going to give me. I've got to pull out certain words. I've got to pull out certain meanings. And then have to answer these 15 questions about this paragraph. So you're going to begin that process by allowing them to predict new books. And then when you're finished with the book, you say, you know what? You thought this was going to happen, and it did. You had a great prediction. Use big words. Don't use baby words. Use big words. Don't baby talk your child. They're going to outgrow the baby talk stage fast. But if you allow them to continue baby talking or your baby talking to your child, that turns into whining when they're about 4 and 5 years old because they just know how to talk that little baby talk, and it turns into whining. It sounds like a whiny voice when they get a little older, and it has then become such habit that it's extremely difficult to break. So talk to your child in a regular voice. They need to learn the rhythm of speaking, the languages. If you have multiple languages spoken in your home, you know that the rhythm and the alliteration of the languages are different. So talk in a normal voice, in a normal rhythm. It's very, very important for them to learn that so that they get the feel of that, okay? But books are so important, so easy to have them be able to predict, be able to give them context, clues and everything on that, because that's going to be what they're doing. Let's see. Language and literacy. How many books would you estimate a child is supposed to hear before they go to kindergarten? What's a number? Just throw one out. To help their reading skills, what do you think is the estimated number that a child is supposed to hear before they go to kindergarten? At least 1,000 books. You got 4 years to get 1,000 books. Now, there's two books in my house that I think were read 1,000 times. We didn't read 1,000 books, but we read 1,000 times the same couple books. And so you really have probably read far more than what you think. And again, that repetition is vital for those kiddos. So even if you don't, please don't go in a panic and go to your child's library tonight and go, we don't have 1,000 books. You don't have to have 1,000 books. You have to have read to them about 1,000 times. Okay, so all the repetition that you've done in reading their favorite 2 or 3 books, that counts every time you've read it. But it's so important to have new things and to be able to go through that. It also, use signs in your world. They know Walmart sign. They know the Target sign. They know Starbucks. They know everywhere that you go, they know those signs. Use that to develop language and literacy in their world. Do any of those signs have a letter that is in their name? W-A-L-M-A-R-T. My name is Kelly. I have an L. Walmart has one L. I have 2 L's in my name. Get them to understand things that they see in print media in their world, magazines, their books, flyers that come in your mail. You're going to throw those circulars away anyways. You might as well let them cut them up, or you might as well let them circle them with crayons or with markers or pencils, whatever you do with them. Use print media in their world to help them develop their language and literacy as much as possible. It is already out there. They're already familiar with it. Just use it in your flyers and things that they can. Stuff comes in, 3 and 4 year olds, let them do scissors. Fantastic skill for developing those muscles that they need for that pencil hold is allowing them to do scissors. Now, we have rules. We don't just hand them scissors and leave them in the room. They need to be child-appropriate scissors. We need to have had a discussion about scissors. We cut only paper. We do not cut shirts. We do not cut pants. We don't cut sister's hair. We don't cut the dog. We don't cut the couch or pillow. I mean, you go through all the things. We cut only paper and only when mommy or daddy is in the room to assist you. We don't go get them on our own unless that's you feel confident that they're ready for that. But while we're learning, you give them boundaries. So when you're fixing dinner, they're sitting at the kitchen table with appropriate print media and scissors to cut. They can cut out the letters of their name. They can cut out things that they recognize. Kroger, Walmart, Target, Starbucks, McDonald's, Wendy's, wherever y'all go, let them cut things out that they know and let you start realizing, and maybe you've printed their name for them across the top of a paper and they're trying to find something in the magazine that matches that K, that matches the E and the L and the L and the E and the Y, and they're trying to match their letters up that way. That is a fantastic fine motor skill, sequencing, matching game, and it gives them something to do while you're fixing dinner and they're not whining and crying and trying to get your attention because they have homework. They're busy. So that's a great tool for them. Talk about placement. Placement is huge. Placement of letters. Is it at the beginning sound? The beginning of the book? The beginning of the word? Is it at the end of the word? Is it at the end of the book? So placement, spatial terms are very, very hard for children to get, but very important for them to learn. And you can begin to do that. Let's start. This is at the beginning. This is at the end. This is in the middle. That's ways that you can help with that in language and literacy. In math and science, that's really where you're going to get the rest of your spatial terms. Spatial terms are your, I am standing next to the podium. My paper is on top of, the dog crawls under the table. And those are things that are hard for children to get because they're not really concrete. Even though we see them as concrete, children don't. And so it's hard for them to get what those things mean. So using it in any way that you can, using it in your, you know, helping, like I said, in language and literacy development and getting those spatial terms, what's first, what's last, what's first, what's second, what comes next, those types of words First, we're going to go put our pajamas on. Next, we're going to brush our teeth. Then we're going to read a book. And lastly, we're crawling in bed. So you've given sequencing of what's going to happen. Those are important ways to do that as well, okay? But you can also do it with math and science. But that's where your big spatial terms are going to come together. Also with math, you're patterning, you're sequencing, you're discussing what's happening, what's connected, how does their world fit together. One-to-one correspondence really, really needs to happen before kindergarten because it will just make their life so much easier. Throw 10 pieces of pasta out in a pile on the table and tell them to count them. So they take it from the group and they move one at a time. One, two, three, and they're going to 10, and bump that up to 20. That's one-to-one correspondence. They can touch and say the number that is in the next sequence, and they can count the number of people in the room. One, two, three, four. Count how many people are in your room. Count how many shoes are in their closet. Count how many bags of trash are sitting out and you have to go out for trash day. Count how many plates are in the sink. How many forks did you just put in the dishwasher? There's a million ways to use these things, but getting that one-to-one correspondence for a child is very, very important. They will do a ton of that in kindergarten. And so getting that started and getting that practiced as much as you can is a great way to help them out. Daytime, nighttime, you would think that would be pretty easy, but it can be a little challenging. And what we call day and night, what do we do? What's different? The sun's up, the moon's out, it's light, it's dark, it's warm, it's cold. We wear clothes during the day, we wear pajamas at night. We're out at school in the daytime, we're at home at night. Different things of getting them to understand what happens and how things are different and how things are the same. But day and night is a big one to bring up. Getting them to do that themselves, okay? Social and emotional, that is that's a really big one. We start out with smiling, reaching, imitating others. When you start to smile, that baby smiles back at you. That's imitation. They're beginning to learn, okay, these facial expressions are okay. You've got your two-year-old who, you guys have probably been through this, I do it myself. I want to do it myself. No, I do it myself. And they're imitating you. They want to do the same thing because they're watching, and now their little bodies are trying to do the same thing. It's a phase they have to develop. But sometimes the things they imitate, you're like, uh-oh, I need to change some of my ways or something like that, because you're like, you're right, I do it that way, and I didn't think it looked like that, but you're doing it exact. So it's a good thing. For kindergarten, a huge thing, four-year-olds, parents right now, get them able to do a bare minimum of a two-step direction. First, you put on your pajamas. Second, you brush their teeth. They will be given directions in multiple steps in kindergarten. First, you're going to go to the Mass Center, and you're going to work with the link connectors, and you're going to complete that task there. Then you're going to the literacy center, and I need you to finish working on your poem. So there's step one, step two. First, I need you to clean up your trash from your table when they're in the lunchroom. Then I need you to go get in line, and we're going to walk outside for recess. At least a two-step direction. They really should be at three and four steps, being able to hear it, being able to understand it, do the steps, and complete it. Now, do kids get distracted? Yes. Are they going to complete it every single time exactly how you said it? No. Does that mean they're going to fail kindergarten? No. These are things that you're practicing with. These are things that you're working on at home as parents now with four-year-olds. They really need to start being able to do those multi-step. Number one, that's what a teacher is going to ask them to do. Number two, sequencing. Again, that's reading skills. Those are math skills. First, I have to do this. Then I do this. First comes the letter, then comes the chunk, then the word. Those are all sequencing events as the brain develops that we have to let them work on. We have to give them the opportunity to complete. Again, you as the parent must provide an appropriate time frame for those things to be done. Will they do them much slower than you? Yep. Will you be inside at about, your blood pressure's raised 20 points? You're like, just get it done. Yes. You have to, with a smile on your face, say, "You're doing a great job, darling. You got step one done. Let's finish step two," and encourage them to do that. They have to have time to process it. Their processing units, they don't work as fast as ours. It's been a while since we've been 2, 3, and 4 years old. And we had to learn in the same way. So you have to give them time to practice it. You have to give them time to learn it. Practicing is learning. They do it over and over. If you guys have a morning routine, good. That's great. Call those steps out. They probably know what they're doing already, but you're calling out the steps now. First, I want you to go have breakfast. Then I want you to get dressed. Come and find me when you're done. Okay? And then they're finishing eating their cereal. Then they go get dressed. Then they come find you. Fantastic. Now I need you to brush your teeth and get your backpack. We're getting ready to go to school. Or whatever your morning routine is, give them sequencing steps. Do this. Come find me when you're done. That's what a teacher's going to need them to do. Finish your math center. Finish your literacy center. Come find me when you're done. I'll tell you where I want you to go next. And then she's going to pull them to come sit with them for guided reading. And they'll do it that way. But they've got to be able to do those multi-step sequencing events. That's very important. Those kids that have trouble with that, not that they're going to fail or do anything wrong in kindergarten. They're just going to have a little bit more of a frustration clicking in with that. And it'll be easier if you practice it now before they get to school. Okay? A huge part of social emotional, is my child ready to go to kindergarten? How do they handle rejection? How do they handle conflict resolution? What happens to them when someone takes their crayon? What happens when someone says, "No, I don't want to play with you right now. I'm playing with this friend"? What happens if they don't get snack right when they want snack? Or you don't give them a drink of water exactly when they want a drink of water? Do we go, "Oh, okay, I can wait 2 minutes"? Or do we fall on the floor like a wet noodle and we throw a fit and we're just sobbing for 20 minutes? I mean, those are very, very normal responses on both sides. It just depends on how your child handles it. They really need to not be so wet noodle-ish, because someone's going to hurt their feelings in school. Not intentionally, but someone's going to say, "I'm playing on the playground with these two friends right now. I'll play with you later." How's your child going to feel when that happens? They need to be okay with that. "Okay, I'll play with you later," and then go find someone else. We don't need to fall apart when that happens. If a teacher says, "We can't have snack right now, honey. We're doing our English lesson right now. We're working on our literacy center." How's that going to happen? They need to be able to wait 5 minutes till we go to lunchtime, and then they can eat lunch. That delayed gratification. I can't have it exactly what I want, exactly when I want it. In case you guys haven't noticed, the Frisco area is not very good at doing delayed gratification. We tend to, "Okay, we'll give it to you right now." And that's a very important skill. In your job, you don't get a raise just because you walk in and want a raise. You have to wait for that full year to be able to go. Some projects start in 2 months. You want to really work on that project, but you have to finish this one first in your workforce. So delayed gratification comes even as adults, and so we have to begin to practice that skill as a child. But how they handle someone telling them no, how they handle another child being upset with them, how they handle someone taking something from them, conflict resolution, what do they do? Some children will just shut down, go off by themselves, and internalize it. That's not good either. They don't wet noodle on the floor, but to internalize all of that and not share their feelings and not talk about it, that's not a good thing either. They need to be able to say, "I had that first. I'm glad to give it to you when I'm done. You can have a turn next," and go through those processes. Begin to work with them on those steps. Maybe they're not doing conflict resolution as well as they needed to, as well as they do need to now. So begin working on that between now and next August. You have a lot of time, a lot of time to work on that before your little ones go to school in August. And there's a huge development between like March to August in most four-year-olds. They just blossom and they're getting ready. So you'll see that a lot of things are happening, but it is important to be able to not freak out and be able to handle things like the conflict resolution, delayed gratification. Those kind of things are important. To be a good listener, That is a huge thing. We mentioned that in the beginning. To be a good listener is a huge thing. I need to listen to my teacher. I need to follow those directions and complete the tasks she gave me. I need to be able to be a good listener to my friends so that I know what they want, so I'm not pushing into an existing game. I heard them say, we're going to finish our game and you can play with us on the next one. Okay, I'm going to sit and watch, and then I'm going to get to join in the next one. So being a good listener to hear, whether it's peer related, whether it's teacher or authority related, that's a very good thing. And a lot of times when we just talk over and over, we tend to be Charlie Brown's mom. Wah, 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 because we're saying so much all the time. They kind of choose to just tune us out. But you've got to get them to practice listening and just being able to say things one time, step one, step two, and do that. This is not easy, raising kids, but it's the greatest job on the planet. And getting them ready for school this age is such a fun, fun age. I've been through it three times. I have three boys. I have two in high school now and one a freshman in college. A lot of it is very similar to my preschoolers. It's just bigger problems and bigger things we're practicing on. But a lot of it doesn't really change. It just tends to be the same thing. So I'm going to hand out, this is something for you to take home. This is nothing I created. I just didn't want you guys to have to go find it. There's two pages there. So you'll just take the top one and it's collated that way. Oh, let me take half over here. Sorry. Perfect. Thank you. This is from Frisco ISD. This is the what does my child need to know to be ready for kindergarten? What skills will help me? There's two pages to it. What skills will help me get ready for kindergarten? This is on the Frisco ISD website, but I figured you guys weren't quite ready for it, so I just printed it out for you. These are just some skills for you to practice on at home. You may be able to go through and go, I've got 20 out of 30. Yay! This is what I'm going to work on, these 10 between now and August. These are skills that you may have started seeing growth in your child in, and you're going to continue developing that now. But this is what Frisco as a district would want for your child to know, be able to do, and this will help them be a little more successful in kindergarten. Okay? We are done at 8, so what I wanted to do is allow you guys some time to ask questions if we talked about anything that you wanted, had a question about, if we talked about or said something, or if I didn't talk about something you came in wanting to know. Yes, ma'am.
My 5-year-old has an issue with differentiating between fantasy and real world. Mm-hmm. I don't want to really train out the creativity, but how do I keep it under control?
Yes, you don't ever want to squelch that creativity, because that's vital as they grow and creates an out-of-the-box thinker. But what you do want to do is say, we need to talk about things that are real right now, and then we're going to have a time to create something. So just distinguish between the two, but never squelch that creativity, because that brain is going and imagination is setting in, and that is a fantastic thing. But never go ahead and squelch that. Just distinguish between the... Yes, we're going to talk about our ABCs. These are real things. This is the truth. This is what we need to learn today. And then let's talk about creating a story. How would you like to use these ABCs to create now a story? So you've talked about the things that are real, and now you're going to use some of those real things to create a fantasy that he has, a creative story. And we're going to use these letters and numbers that we talked about today, and we're going to talk about, and we're going to create something with them. So, yeah, never squelch, but just separate that way. Pastor Dave. I'm sorry. She asked how my child has a hard time telling the difference between fantasy and reality. And do I squelch that reality? And he said, no, we just separate the two. We talk about what is real, and then we talk about what's creating, because creating is so very important in allowing them to do that. Yes, sir.
You spoke about when a child is trying to communicate, mm-hmm. may not have the words, mm-hmm. we should be patient and listen.
Yes.
And I'm thinking specifically about 2 or 3-year-old.
Yes.
When they're trying to communicate something and they're getting frustrated that they're not able to communicate what they want. They want that over there, but we're not picking it up. Mm-hmm. And you see the frustration in them. What is a tool to communicate with
them. When you see a frustration in a child, they're not able to communicate exactly what they want to the adult that they're with. If you've tried to ask them a couple things, do you want this? And the answer is no, no. And you see that frustration level? Take my hand and go show me. Because then they can move over there. What you've done is you've given that little bit of time to allow them to kind of detox, reset their brain, give them time to think about what it is. Stuttering is most of the time their brain. You may have a 2.5, 3-year-old, and you go, but, and you think, oh my goodness. What's happened is their brain is 5 paragraphs ahead and they can't catch their mouth up. It's just stuck. So give them that time to, okay, slow down. Let's take a deep breath. Now, let's try again. What do you want to tell me?
My son usually has the word, but I'm not understanding the way he's enunciating it or saying it.
Okay.
He's getting frustrated because he's saying it. He knows he's saying the word.
You're not comprehending what he is saying to you with his dictation. Then I would get him to go show it to you, and then I would hold it up. If you have speech therapy at all, what they do is they tell you to hold it as close to you as your mouth or put your head down by it if it's too big to pick up and say it correctly. Watch my mouth. And then you say the word correctly, cup, cup, and you're distinguishing between that. Sometimes they just hear things and they can't get it out. Now, you know, that may be just a phase that he's going through and he's not there on the fine motor development here yet. That may be, there's a lot of options there. I don't know him to even you say anything. That can be anywhere from development of the motor skills.
When he says it, when I know it, oh yeah, it's on it just like that. I'm just not.
You're not picking it up quick enough. Yeah, yeah. Getting him to show you, and then getting him to show you, take my hand and show Daddy what you're talking about. Because then he realizes you have full attention. You're giving him his full attention because you're going to go with him. But it also gives them a chance to show you, and then you say it the way that it needs to be said. And a lot of it is just, you know, little kids have that precious little lisp, and you're getting some of those letters switched. You know, K's become T's and R's and W's and those kind of things. So, you know, they outgrow a lot of that. And but at 2.5 to 3, that's very normal. Yeah. Yes, ma'am. When do we outgrow those? There are certain ones that are normally outgrown by age 5 to 5.5. The T's and K's usually get worked out. The R's and W's, the G's and L's, the Z's and J, those kind of things. If those aren't resolved, the basic ones by 5, you may just want to wait. Your kindergarten teacher may say, would you mind if we did some speech therapy testing? You know, and a lot of it, again, it might simply be practicing the proper way to say it. It could be needing a little bit of work in order for someone to tell them where to put the tongue in their mouth because they learned how to put it incorrectly. It could be I have fluid in my ears and I'm hearing it improperly. And so I'm saying the way I'm hearing it, but I don't realize that I'm hearing it incorrectly. So speech, all of that happens, but most of them should stop by about 5 to 5.5. Usually by 6, if they don't, then a teacher may pick up on that and suggest something at that point. Hang on just a second. I got this one. You're next.
Me?
Yes.
Let's just say if a child is not, I know with my child, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They think our child is prepared. Mm-hmm. I had this conversation with you before.
Yep.
Just say if he's not prepared, mm-hmm. if I don't think he's prepared, what mm-hmm. happens if I decide not to send him on to kindergarten? What happens?
Okay, if as a parent you're not sure about whether to send your child to kindergarten or to hold them back, that's a decision that in the state of Texas you as a parent get to make. You can choose not to do kindergarten at all. Honestly, it's not required by the state of Texas. First grade is. You can choose to do private kindergarten. You can do homeschool kindergarten. You could just not do it and put them in first grade. Not a recommendation I would give, but it's legally that's an option that you have. But you can choose to do a gift of another year, and you don't have to do anything. There's no forms to fill out at the public school system. If you choose to keep them at home one more year for practicing things, you don't have to do anything. If you're on the fence about whether we should or should not send them, I would enroll them at the school that you want them in, and then also enroll them at kindergarten. Because kindergarten roundup will happen usually that second week of April. And if you enroll them, you've got all the paperwork done. And then what you can do is you can just call and say, we're having a gift of another year. Unenroll my child for this year in kindergarten. So it's just a phone call. It's easy to unenroll them. If you decide at the last second, I think my child, boy, in six weeks, we just exploded and we are now ready for kindergarten, you can walk into kindergarten the first day and say, we're ready. I've got everything I need here. Or, you just like a new child moving in, coming from another city or another state, they get to start school at any time. So you can enroll your child whenever you want to. But you don't have to fill out paperwork or do anything if you choose to keep them at home with you. But if you're fencing about what to do, I would enroll them for kindergarten and make your decision, because you're going to enroll there for April and you don't start school until August 26th the next year. So just let it go. Frisco kindergarten is 7:50 to 2:50. 7:50 to 2:50 a.m. Yep. Yes, you were next. As fast as possible.
Pre-K, before kindergarten?
If I get my choice, I separate them at 18 months. I do. You're sitting next to a mama of twins right there. Separate them as much as possible for
okay,
a couple
reasons. One back and send one.
No, that's very challenging.
Okay, yeah.
I just thought you meant like separating in classrooms. Do I separate twins? I would separate twins in classrooms as fast as possible. In your home, if they share a bedroom or separate bedrooms, that's totally up to you. It gives them an opportunity to develop their own personality. There's always one who's a little more dominant, verbal personality, and that dominant one will always do for the other. So the other one doesn't practice as much. That makes sense. And when they're separate, their personalities will just blossom. They'll do really such a great job in separating. They become their own little person. They need their own friends. They spend a lot of time together as twins at home, birthday parties, family events. Whenever you go somewhere, it's always together. So to be separated just for a little while. Now, Frisco ISD will separate twins.
I think we get a choice at our elementary.
Do you? Maybe in kinder you might, but usually they push it later, but it's a good thing to separate.
An example of what she's saying is a friend of mine in Houston, his twins were in the same class around first or third grade, and the dominant one kept completing the sentences when she couldn't communicate to the teacher, so she never got the chance to do it and make it.
I have a dominant one.
That's what I just said.
You do, and they're probably dominant in... Maybe each of them maybe it's not always the same dominant, but in verbal skills, you have one that's dominant. In willingness to try something, more of your daredevil, it might be the other one. So you're, and someone who's willing to walk up and introduce themselves and make friends, that's going to be one of them. Somebody's always going to stay behind.
Accolades, they're not always going to get the same accolades.
Mm-hmm.
But they want, so I feel like, mine gets whatever they get in their classes.
They don't always have to be the same. Yes, ma'am.
I'm a mother of twins as well. How do you deal with preparing for the separation if you do intend to separate them in kindergarten?
There will be at any point that you separate them. But talk about that. The question was, how do you prepare a child for the separation anxiety when you have twins? At any age, that's going to happen. And so you need to prepare them. It's going to be the same thing as separating from the twin as it's going to be separating from you as a parent. You talk about that. If it's possible, one twin stays home with daddy and you've taken one out for dinner. Or vice versa. Or one gets to go with grandma and one stays home for a couple hours. Whatever your situation allows, give them as much opportunity to be away from each other in small little bits, and then they've learned that that one's always going to come back and that you can, it's going to be okay. You're just going to have to reassure them, it's okay, they're going to go have fun, we're going to have fun here, we'll get together and we'll talk about it later. It's in how you present it, not, are you going to be nervous? It's all in the presentation, too, of how you're going to do that with twins. But it's a bit of a challenge, but I would separate as much as possible. I'm married to an identical twin, so I'm on the adult side of it. Separate. Separate.
It doesn't take away from their closeness, because that's what...
No, it does not take away from their closeness at all. we live here in Frisco, and my brother-in-law lives in Houston, and it's that twin thing exists long distance, because my husband will just call and go, something's wrong with him, and he's had a bad day. I'm like, how did you know that? He's like, I don't know, I just knew. Okay, twin. Yes?
My son's in a pre-K class, mm-hmm. and he's writing letters mm-hmm. and numbers, but they're like funny looking, like he's drawing them, not writing them. Do I correct them or let kindergarten teachers?
I would start correcting him okay. if he's beginning, and get the letters so they look the same, not in a negative way, but hey, I see how you drew this letter, and ask him if he's really, I mean, you need to kind of find out, is he really trying to write the letter? Is that how he's seeing that letter? Or is he actually trying to draw something from that letter? If they're look, because some kids are, if he has that art skill, he's going to draw everything, and you need to get him to write the letters and draw pictures at a later time.
And
those need to be
reversed.
Very normal. P and B, D and all that, so very normal, that's okay. They're going to get it. If they're learning how to draw it, that's a very common, that will just happen with maturity. Okay, but you can just say, oh, look, you made the right shape. We just flipped it backwards. Let's pretend we're making we're having a mirror and we're going to flip it around. This one makes the letter B. This one makes the letter D. They're very similar, and you just talk about the things that look the same. We've got the straight line. We've got the circle, but we've got the circle on one side of the line and circle on the other side of the line. Makes two different letters, two different sounds. Talk about the similarities and the differences of it. But if he's forming everything and just that P and Q and B and D are backwards, 110% normal. For that age.
That
sorry?
Like what age do they normally?
They'll usually get that in kindergarten because you're at 5 into 6 years old or almost 6 and a half, and it's the practice because they will write all the time in kindergarten. So that usually just flips around. But if you can put anything in front of them to show them the proper way for that to look, so you've got their name in letters up there, you know, capital and lowercase letters, and then you have them practice tracing it with their finger, because writing is nothing, muscle memory, that's all that it is. So just getting them to write it and trace it over and over and over, you're training the brain to feel that pattern. So get them to do that. We do a ton of our writing and practicing in shaving cream on the table. Shaving cream rocks. Put some shaving cream out, just a little squirt. Smells fantastic. Takes crayons off your tabletop. It's great. And then you just let them write. And then when they write, they smear it. It's clean slate. They get to write again. Easy cleanup with a paper towel. Doesn't stain anything. It's fantastic. So all you're doing in shaving cream is muscle memory. That's it. And so it's a great thing. Write their name across the top and have them copy it for you. Yes. We'll try. You haven't answered one. Yes, go ahead.
Suggestions for helping with that handling of rejection. So my firstborn always wants to be first. I want to be the first in line. I want to be the first who wins the game. I'm the winner. Then how, other than it's okay letting other people win, mm-hmm. What are some ways that you've seen that help?
Yes, how do we handle rejection and wanting to be the first all the time? That's part of being a firstborn, and it is. But how to handle that, and we just need to talk about how we want to do our personal best, and we want everyone else to do their personal best, and how God only wants us to do our very best. Sometimes we might be the best. Sometimes someone else will be better than us, and that's okay. Somebody's going to run faster than you one day. Someone's going to sing louder than you one day. And that is okay. If you did your best, that is all I will ever ask from you, because you gave your best. And no one is going to ask any more than your personal best. Sometimes we'll be the fastest or the loudest or the first in line. Sometimes we'll be second, third, or we might even be last one day. And we still are going to walk in the line no matter what position we're in. We're all going to get where we're going. So just letting them know, because sometimes the fear of, if I don't get what I want, I don't know if I'm going to get there if I'm the last. I'm always the first. I don't know what happens to this last person back here. I can't see because I am so far in first place. I don't know what's going on. I'm not sure they're going to get there. So let them know it doesn't matter if you're first or in the middle or at the end. You kind of have to give them permission to realize that the fear of the unknown for these little guys is huge. I'm always first because I'm right there with that teacher. 25 kids back, I don't know if they ever get there. I see them again eventually, but I don't know if they got everywhere I need to go. So just letting them know that it's okay to not win all the time, to not do anything, but all that I ask as mommy and all that God asks us to do is our personal best. And giving them kind of permission to not be okay. And then we talk about what happens if, you know, if someone else is faster than you one day. Then all you need to do is you need to say, wow, you are really fast. I thought I was fast, but you're a great runner. It's okay. Next time, I'm going to try my hardest to beat you next time. You know, and just give them words of encouragement. If you give them tools to use later, things to say, they'll hear that, and then they can pull that out later on and practice that. Yes, sir?
Are there any concerns with some of the skills like dealing with delayed gratification and conflict resolution differ based on setting? Like, the feedback we get from you guys here is everything's great, perfect. I mean, couldn't be a problem. But we don't deal
what with you do with it at home?
Or conflict resolution at home, especially with brother and sister, very well at all.
Yeah, and that's because you're mom and dad. And so the home is, the question was, how do we deal with delayed gratification in different settings? Sometimes we're very successful, sometimes we're not. The situation in that regard is each one of those kids know that I am the safest in my home and mommy and daddy will love me no matter how I act. So they save all those special characteristics just for you guys. But when they're in a classroom, they're like, okay, the teacher has set these rules for me and this is how I have to behave. Because if I don't, I'm not going to get to play in that science center and she's got worms in that dirt. And if I don't behave, then I'm not going in the science center. I'm going to be removed from that. So I'm not going to get the privilege of being there. So we tend not to see some things in a school setting, in a classroom setting, that you will at home for that sole purpose of we're simply different. There's also more to do in a classroom setting. There's two at home. There's anywhere from 16 in our four-year-old class, and they're going to jump into 23 to 26 kiddos in kindergarten. So there are more people to be distracted by. But when there's only one, you can think of a lot of ways to annoy your sibling if you just got one to focus on instead of 20-something other kids. So it is very different sometimes. Parents will come and tell us, oh, they're doing this at school, at home. You're going to get, just be prepared. And we never see it. And it's simply because it's a different setting. Yeah. Yes.
What age are you supposed to know, or do you find out what are they going to be left or right-handed?
Left or right-handed dominant. Normally, by four and a half, they have figured that out. Twins can sometimes be ambidextrous. What I would do in writing, they may not know because that feels funny. These muscles are not all yet developed. What I would do is a lot of times we'll put something down on a table with nothing else around and say, pick that up. Their dominant hand is going to go for it.
Should I encourage that dominant hand?
I would encourage it. They may be, again, you're a little different with twins. If they reverse, ambidextrous with writing versus sports, if they're going to be ambidextrous, it's usually academically they're one way, sports they're the other. But usually if you're not sure on what you're doing, let them try both. Write your name for me with this hand and then with this hand. Which one looks neater? The neater one's going to be their dominant hand. They have more control over that hand. So they may want to do both, and let them use the other one. The more they can use both hands, the better off they're going to be. But choose one that they're going to begin to write with. And that is an easy way of putting something in front of their face, you know, quick as you're coming at them, they're going to block it with a dominant hand. If you've set something, a pen or whatever, down on the table, oh, could you pick that up for me? They're going to go with their dominant hand. It's going to be that way. They may just not feel comfortable in writing yet, so that those muscles just haven't developed enough. Yeah. Someone else? Yes, we haven't had one.
I know statistics on this probably don't really exist, but I'm curious. We just moved here recently.
Sure.
And I've heard a lot of people say that a lot of people hold back, like, May to August birthdays. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, do you know anything about, I mean, is it really that most kindergarten classes, they're all, like, 5 and a half, almost turning six, or have already turned six?
A lot of them are.
I can't help but think, like, my daughter's July, mm-hmm. and I can't, you know, I mean, again, I know a lot's going to happen between now and mm-hmm. August, but I can't help but think, you know, she'll be maybe behind the eight ball a little bit and so much younger, and then I know mm-hmm.
you're really
no,
not so much. You don't want to hold back later. You want to make that decision now. It's a little more challenging as a kindergartner to say, oh, your friends are going to first grade, darling. We're going to stay here. It's a lot easier right now in a preschool situation to say, we're going to have, you know, we're going to be back in school next year. We're going to go to a pre-kindergarten or a TK. Some people call them the TK, transitional kindergarten. It's not as easy to go to kindergarten. Now, Frisco will allow you to go to kindergarten, and if you're really, really serious about it, then I would go talk with that counselor at your home campus and let them know my intent is to watch and see if we need to repeat. You need her to get her head around that as well. A lot of people will normally, sadly, in this area, especially boys, will hold back, not so much because they need it, but for athletics because they're that much bigger. I think that's a really, really bad reason to hold back. Personally, that's my personal opinion. Nothing more than a personal opinion. Sorry, that one slipped out. I have three boys. I have one July and I have two Novembers. And I will tell you that my two Novembers at almost six had a lot less struggles than my one who turned five July 10th and went to school August 15th. I am in that large group of moms who at that time I should have held them back and I didn't. But I've really never met any parent who said I held back and I regret it.
Well, okay, that's what everyone tells me.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So I just wanted to comment on this because I have a 15-year-old son and I didn't hold it back. His birthday's in May.
Mm-hmm.
He turned five and went to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter in kindergarten or first grade or second grade or
middle school
until he got to seventh grade.
Yeah.
And then he got to eighth grade. And like, there are boys who have full beards.
Mm-hmm.
And my kid, not a hair on him, you know, and it made a huge difference.
And it's that ability and the thing, that's what I'm saying. Can your child pass kindergarten at age five? Absolutely. We can learn our letters and our shapes and our numbers and we can memorize words and we can begin to write and see huge improvement. They don't even get grades in kindergarten. They get satisfactory, unsatisfactory, or needs improvement. That's all they're going to get in kindergarten and first grade. You don't even start to get number grades until second grade. So you're going to get those for 2 years. So can they pass first? Yes, they can. But you're really not making the decision of a gift of another year based on what they can do in kindergarten. You're looking ahead. Can I handle the stress of this tax test, the star test at third grade? Can I handle in middle school those guys come and take this? I got something to pump you up. I mean, we'll make you faster. We'll make you read more. It is prevalent. And be able to 1 year older to say, no thanks, I don't need that. I got it. I'm going to go home and study. To not give in to the peer pressure because they've got 12 extra months under their belt at four, five is an enormous difference. Now, some people are totally ready to go. Some of it's just the characteristics that God gave them. Some of them still need help. If you gave them the gift of another year, they could almost use another one. But they got to go at some point, and they got to start practicing. So you need to let it happen. But if you just give them a gift of another year, you know, it's just that much stronger, that much more practice, that much more confidence in themselves. As they're the older one in the class, then they begin to develop those leadership skills because those teachers are going to say, you're one of my oldest. I need you to be a helper. I need you. Oh, you already know how to do this. Can you go help this little one who needs some help in practicing how to get in line, how to walk correctly down the hallway? Because this is not walking correctly down the hallway. This is walking correctly down the hallways. They'll do the ducktails with the bubbles in their mouth in kindergarten and first grade. So I'm going to put you in front of this person so you can set the example of how to do this. You're developing leadership skills with that gift of another year. And when they feel confident, when they have more leadership skills, they have the ability to say no to the things they need to say no to. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so my son is August 3rd. What is the cutoff?
The age, you have to be five by September 1. Yeah, if you turn, the parents I feel sorry for are those September 1st birthdays. They have to decide right there. If they're, you know, August 31st and they're still four and they turn five September 2nd, you have to wait another year. But you have to be five on September 1st. Yes?
So most of our birthdays
are in
reference to boys.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter is
on her 30th
birthday.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be specific to the child. How does she handle conflict resolution? Is she ready to go? How does she handle being away from you guys? Is she... You have to really look at small.
High school with probably older.
Mm-hmm.
Is she? I'm an August birthday, so I was always doing my class. So I based off what I know.
Right. There are some August birthdays who are 100% ready, and you as mommy need to know that and be ready to send her, and that's okay. That's great. There are some, January birthdays. They turn five in January and are supposed to go to kindergarten in August. There's some January birthdays who aren't ready, And that, you know, I mean, that's just, it just depends upon the child. But these things that we've been talking about, if she's ready to go, she's ready to go no matter her size, no matter her birth date. God has given her those characteristics ready to go to school. It tends to be boys versus girls. You know, there are some girls that I have this year in school with us that have a gift of another year. Usually I've got about a dozen or so that stay with us for that extra bonus year. And if I've got about a dozen, usually 10 of them are boys. You know, I usually just have a couple girls that just need to practice a little bit more. And they may have that late spring, early summer birthday. So that's pretty normal. Yes? You?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, tan sweater, sorry.
So what kind of questions should we as parents be asking their teachers to determine if they need an extra year? And does the number of days they go that year for, do you think that makes a difference?
The more days they go during their 4 year is just that many more days of practice. Does that mean that if you only go to school 2 days a week when you're 4 years old, you're not ready for kindergarten? Absolutely not. You can practice the other, you know, 5 days at home. Things that you should be asking your teacher, tell me how they are with their peers. Are we handling things well? Are they getting along well? Are they getting in trouble? Do you have to correct them, redirect them multiple times throughout the day? Yes, we redirect all four-year-old children multiple times throughout the day. But then, you know, there's the average, and then someone else has to have, you know, come here, darling, we're over here now. Come, we're over here now. You know, how do they handle transition? We have to move from playground back into class. Do they fall apart when it's time to leave playground? Oh, we got to leave our classroom. Put your stuff down. You know, have given the warning. They've given the transition, you know, warning. They've sang the song, rang the bell, done the chimes, whatever it is that that class does, and they know the routine. When it's time to leave what they're doing and move to the next thing, are they capable of doing that and knowing that they can come back to finish at a later time, or knowing that that activity is just done for that day? I'll get back to the Science Center on Thursday when it's my turn again. Are they okay with that? Or do we have a meltdown? I can't believe I don't have it done. So, you know, or can we just move on to, hey, it's time to go outside. Okay, let's go outside. Hey, we're going on to Spanish class. We got to go to gym class. We're going to music class. How do they handle those transition times? That's a huge component to ask your teacher, your child's teacher. You know, what are they ready for transitions? Because that's a physical thing that a child handles. They can get worked up, they can get fired up, blood pressure raises, tears, everything, if they're not ready. If they can't handle a transition, a kindergarten classroom is nothing but transition. And if it's causing them such stress and anxiety, you know, as you practice that between now and potential kindergarten in August, or do we decide on giving them a gift of another year so we can practice those things? That's going to be social emotional. Yeah. Yeah. Some right here.
We've talked some about the ability to articulate, like at age 2 and 3 yes, and so forth. We're seeing some of that at age 4, almost 5, where my husband and I will be like, what did he say? You know, where a lot of the time, it's entire, like, paragraphs or sentences.
And you didn't get.
Like, huh? And he does take jumps. Like, he'll be completely disinterested in, poor thing, his genetics. His parents, oh goodness, he probably gets it from us. But at any rate, how big a deal is that kind of ability to articulate and communicate to going to kindergarten? Do you send a kid on whose teacher is just kind of always going to go what? Or
a lot of it's going to be speaking in kindergarten. So it, you know, not knowing sure. Everything, you know, just are they hearing it properly? Are they able to process it properly? Is it speech? You know, is it the formation of the mouth and the tongue? Is it hearing incorrectly? And so I'm reproducing what I've heard. So if I heard it incorrectly, I'm going to reproduce it incorrectly. Am I just missing? There's some speech that simply drops syllables. I drop always the last syllable of the word. And so you're hearing the first part, you know, maybe like the first and second syllable, but speech, they don't finish the word. That is a speech pathology thing. And some practice with a speech therapist could be that. I don't know. There's just so many different things that could be. Sometimes it's simply getting him to slow down and to say it. If he's in a hurry to speak it, it's going to come out more jargled. And so you would need to get him to slow down, tell us correctly, pronounce your words right, what are you trying to say, that type of thing. So,
is there a specialist that you could talk to before a kindergarten entrance?
At age three, you can get into your district. At age three, you can call your district and you can get testing. You pay your school taxes. It's free of charge. You call the Early Childhood Center in Frisco is what it is. You call the Early Childhood Center and you tell them, I need to possibly get my child tested for speech. There's an intake meeting. There's an observation that's done with your child and the therapist. And then they come back and have a meeting with you as the parent to say, they don't qualify, or oh yes, we need some speech. Let's get this resolved as much as possible prior to. Prior to age three, you're in something called early childhood intervention, and you're doing that. That's birth through three. At the third birthday itself, they transfer you directly into your school district for any needs that you have. Speech, play therapy, physical therapy, eating disorders, anything like that is all handled that way. Yes, sir?
What was the name of that place again? I'm sorry.
Early Childhood Center. If you call 469-633-3800 and tell them that you need to talk and schedule. Yeah, we talk with them a lot.
I had my 4-year-old tested for speech at the early childhood school just to see.
And it's just to see. Yeah, it's a great place. They're super.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I think this is
brings up another issue.
Yeah.
We have our son was born in June.
Okay.
So he was going to a little Christian school at
okay.
the Lutheran church.
Sure.
And we really liked their program. But rather than putting him in the pre-K or the K-4 or whatever there, we chose a different Christian school because the other one he was going to only had up to kindergarten, and that was it.
Okay.
This one he's at now is K-12, and we like the idea of that.
Sure.
They're a Bible church. You know, we're in line spiritually, you know, biblically with what they
Fantastic.
So that's a big aspect to us. But
yeah.
So now we're kind of wondering. He's 4.5. And he's in kindergarten with other 5-year-old kids, but we're doing it as a K-4, and he would go to kindergarten again.
Okay.
At the same
school. Good. Yeah.
At that point.
That's
but,
okay.
Okay. But here's my question to you. That's just something else we got to figure out now, because what you're saying about holding kids back.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we're ahead of being ahead, I think, of ourselves. But here's my question to you.
Mm-hmm.
We have been thinking, like, we don't want him to go to public school.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line is we want him to be spiritually educated
mm-hmm.
as well in school, you know, if that's possible. So here's kind of the dilemma. We had to discuss with some other parents at the school. They use BJU Press, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, but in his class, some of the things that he's learning, it just didn't seem like he's being challenged. Like, certainly not even as much as he was previously in the year earlier
mm-hmm.
at the other school. We would have kept them there if they had K-12. They don't.
Sure.
So here's my one. Some other people we know, they took their two girls out. They were twins. They put them into public school because they just were feeling that there was too much lacking at this school, at least in their minds. And I could see where they're coming from, because seeing what he's doing, I'm like, gosh, he's just not being challenged.
Not being challenged, right?
Here's my question.
We know nothing though.
We We're pretty adamant about not wanting to go to public school, but do you think there's advantages of public school, the education, you know, the quality of education versus, you know, we can't afford like a Trinity Christian or Preston, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is like a small little Bible church.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, when it really comes down to it, I'm not totally concerned about what my kid's SAT score is. I'm way more concerned that he knows the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So how, I mean, compare and contrast, because you know the public schools, we're in Plano.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I look at it is, you know, in the public school system, you may have some good teachers,
mm-hmm.
but for the most part, it's a godless education system. And that's what we don't like about it. So, I don't know, what are your thoughts of, you know, there's to gain something, you have to give something up a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about maybe better education versus lack of spiritual education. In fact, in public school, I would argue that they actually are trying to destroy, you know, they're not building spirituality, they're destroying it. So what are your thoughts on that?
Two minutes or less.
I'm going to give a personal opinion, and you can, it's free, so take it for what it's worth, okay?
I'll give one.
I'm a big proponent and a huge supporter of the public school. I go to Frisco. I think as parents, it's our job to teach the Bible and Christianity and how important God is and all of that in our home. And kind of the way that my dad raised us is we were homeland missionaries, in that when we've learned it at home, we then go and share it at our mission field, which was our schools. And so that's kind of how my parents raised us, and that's kind of what I view that. I think there are a lot of great schools, private. Some have more opportunity because of size, because of monies. If he's not being challenged, you're truly never going to see his potential academically. If he's not being challenged and then he hits college and he has to be challenged, can he handle that stress? Can he handle that variance, that gap that may potentially exist? That's a question you have to answer. I can't answer that for you. Just some food for thought on that. But I'm a big fan of public schools because it's very much real world. And they're going to have bad things said to them. They're going to have hurtful things said to them. Doesn't mean it won't happen in a Christian school. You know? And so I, for academic purposes, or a church, I like the public schools for that reason, because they can excel if he truly needs to be challenged. There's the gifted, talented program. Private schools just don't have that, can't have that. You can't jump into the GT programs of the public schools if you're in a private school. If you need help and you're in a private school, you can jump into the services needed for a child, speech therapy, physical therapy. You can get that for free if you need help to get where you should be. But on the opposite end, if you're higher than where the average is, you can't jump into a GT program to be challenged. That's going to be some non-curricular activities that you're going to have to find to challenge him through the math and science groups, or some community activities that he's going to have to find to in order to do, you know, the design engineering and all that kind of stuff. So that's my free advice. Take it for what it's worth. If you know he's not being challenged, that kind of defaults back onto you guys to challenge him then academically. This is what your teacher asked, but I know that you can do a little more, so y'all are going to have to raise that bar.
That's part of the thing. I mean,
well, and what you can challenge him right now at pre-K, at 4K, you know, four kinder and that kind of thing, are you truly going to be able to truly challenge him when he's a junior in high school? You know, it's easy to challenge right now, but can you challenge that and academically when he's in high school? You know, again, it was free advice. My kids go to the public school. Are there things that I wish they hadn't learned from some kids? Yeah, there's some phrases that they came home, but they came home and talked to me about it, and we were able to have a discussion as to why families use those words, or why families speak that way, or why a family would do that. And it gave opportunity of conversation. And now when they're going to go to college, I've got one there, it's kind of like, oh, I don't want part of that, or oh, I don't initiate with that, I don't engage in that. So it, because they've been exposed, they and had conversation at home and were given our thoughts, then they, you know, are able to make their own opinions and kind of follow suit in that. But, you know, my biggest thing, when, if you know he's not being academically challenged, are you really ever going to know?
Well, at least in K-4.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Understand the first grade class is a lot different.
Okay. Then maybe you need to wait until he gets there to truly make a decision. I don't know your school. I don't know what the curriculum is or where he is or anything like that. But, you know, if he's not going to be pushed to do his personal best, because personal best is up here, but teacher accepted is way down here, not many kids fill that gap on their own. They're going to do what has to be done.